You're listening to the Men Overseas Podcast, a show that explores methods and ideas to help you live a bigger life. You will hear interesting stories of how people live, how they save and invest their money, and why having time wealth is better than being a billionaire. If you are entertained, educated, or elevated, be sure to hit the subscribe button. We're just getting started. Now here is your host, Brad D'Antonio.
Hello, my beautiful friends. It is cold outside, so get on in here where the water's warm. Come on. It's real nice. I'll wait. Jump in the water. Get wet with me. Here we go. If you're hearing this, that means you've made it to 2026, and me too. So good on us. In, I think it was August of 25, there was a transaction. It was the priciest card, trading card, in the history of trading cards, and it sold for a record $12.9 million. It was a 2007-2008 Upper Deck Exquisite Collection Dual Logo Man Autographs card, whatever all that means, and it featured both Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, and it sold for $12.93 million at Heritage Auctions, August of 25. And if you're curious, the most expensive sports memorabilia ever sold was a Babe Ruth jersey. It was the one he wore during the 1932 World Series when he supposedly called his shot with two fingers. Remember that? He pointed to center field and then hit it out of the park, allegedly. And that jersey sold for $24.12 million. So just about double what this Jordan Kobe trading card went for. And I'm sure the guy who bought it did believe, in fact, that he pointed and called his shot. But maybe they didn't tell him that he did that on 19 other occasions, too. But he had, on those occasions, had WTP from too much booze in the night before, probably. You baseball players know what I'm talking about. WTP is warning track power. Here's some inside baseball you may not know. As an outfielder, before every game, you go to the warning track and see how big it is, the length of it, and you're measuring it by how many steps it would take you before you hit the fence. But I can tell you, after running into a fence one time, I came to the realization that unless you are measuring the track running full speed, you're wasting your time. Because when you're high on adrenaline during the game, you're chasing a ball down, you not only don't think about counting, but your steps aren't the same. Your strides are way bigger during a game, during live action. So be careful out there, friends, when you're on the warning track. We made it to 2026, and it's a gift of another trip around that flaming hot ball in the middle of space, that electrically charged ball of gas, which turns into plasma, I learned in chemistry in the community. And speaking of plasma, I saw a 65-inch TV the other day for $300. So while we may wish that the cost of healthcare and education would go down, instead we get cheaper televisions. You know, I have long said, ever since I started traveling and got to witness the standards of living around the world, that Americans would probably be 3x wealthier than we are, and that our standard of living would be off the charts, comparatively speaking, if we didn't send so much of our money to all parts unknown. And we're quickly coming to realize just how much of our loot is being stolen, being looted by the takers. We've managed to build a society comprised of those who produce and then those who come up with sophisticated ways of stealing the money of the producers, is what it looks like. And Somalis in Minnesota are just the tip, but the tip hurts, she said. And I say, well, wait until you realize how much we've all been shafted. The commies didn't just have a crime family at the helm. The entire Communist Party is a criminal organization. Scott Adams talks about how many things it had to happen for us to understand what's been going on in the world. It took Elon buying Twitter. It took super smart autists like Mike Benz to explain how all the grift worked by way of USAID. And get this, Minnesota has 42,000 active NGOs. 42,000. it seems that all the communists needed to do was come up with a charitable sounding name, like Food for Kids or Feed the Hungry or something, and then launder money through those organizations. It's sick. And the spouse is usually involved. Plausible deniability kind of thing. But I believe Trump, when he talks about how much of our economy should start booming here pretty soon, hell, just prosecuting fraudsters would mean a huge tax savings for the productive, for the makers. And Adams, he argues that it's a unique combination of things that had to take place for us to understand the world. And he says that without it, we'd all be lost. And I think that's true. I know I would be. And he said in particular, it was Donald Trump and Elon Musk and other like various online movements that made it possible for us to see through the mainstream narratives and understand what's really going on. Your boomer parents who still believe that the news is real, they're likely going to die not knowing that they've been duped. And I think we have to let them probably. I mean, you're not going to convince them otherwise, as I've covered before. And prior to Trump, many of these boomers believed the three-letter networks were truthful, even the ones who are new converts to those who've been red-pilled, so to speak. You ever see the clip of Colbert with that lady that was, I guess she was either an actress or a filmmaker of some sort, and Colbert asked her what she had learned? She was making a movie, I guess, about D.C. and the intelligence agencies, and so she spent time in D.C. with the intelligence community in order to make this movie, and she started to say what surprised her was how the CIA allied themselves with journalists, and Colbert freaks out. It totally caught him off guard, and he spreads his fingers and grabs the back of his head and starts stuttering and tries to change the subject right away. You got to see it. I'll include a link in the show notes. But as somebody who studied body language and human behavior, I eat that kind of thing up. So I hope you like it. But the Trump presidency exposed widespread hoaxes and taught the public that much of the news is fake, or at the very least, very biased. And what Musk did with the purchase of Twitter, now X, he enabled independent voices and alternative reporting to proliferate at scale, providing all the context that the corporate media conveniently leaves out. He said if Trump hadn't won in 2016, or if Musk hadn't bought X, we'd most likely all still be in the dark. And just like your boomer parents. You've heard me say this before, I'm sure, but if you didn't see shenanigans in the most free and fair election we've ever had, you're an idiot. But it's not just Mike Benz, it's all the AI tools like Grok, which is under Elon too, but that all that helps us to understand just how complex and sophisticated are some of these systems that the global communists put in place. How many of us would even know we lived through a color revolution, or even what a color revolution is, if it weren't for the ability to take somebody like Mike Benz's research and then use AI tools to simplify the information, making it easier for we plebs to understand, like the censorship industrial complex. We wouldn't have known how all that worked, and that took people like Schellenberger and Taibbi to go into Twitter and see how the intelligence communities were censoring us. But big tech partnered with communists worldwide to censor citizens. The communists even had fact checkers that your idiot friends would send to show you that they were right. You remember those days? But this series of unlikely interconnected events, that would be Trump's presidency, Musk's acquisition of X, the rise of independent media, online researchers like Benz, you put all that together, and that's what saved free speech and made the public aware of what was going on. I mean, do you remember on X, or you were even afraid to like something because that could get you canceled? Ultimately, what happened was all this action cured society of how blind we were to how we were being manipulated by very powerful institutions, or what the commies called democracy. But that's not actually how I wanted to start today, but I caught the fever there, the fever for the flavor. But back to Happy New Year. Let's join together to make this 2026 the best year of our lives. Who's with me? What I thought I'd do today is go through some of Gerwinder's useful concepts for 2026. I've done this the last couple of years, and I always find it useful. But before we do, this is something I learned the other day. I learned this from Merriam-Webster. It was about napkins. So did you know the nap part of the word napkin comes from nape, which means tablecloth, and the kin part means little? So a napkin is just a little tablecloth. How about that? When I was 10, we were playing in a basketball tournament in Golden Meadow, Louisiana, which they pronounce Golden Meadow. And it's about an hour and a half from where I grew up. So an hour and a half southeast of Thibodaux, Louisiana, and maybe an hour from Thibodaux, and then maybe an hour and a half due south of New Orleans driving. And so we were eating at this McDonald's after one of our basketball games, and this daddy, that's what they call their dad. There's a full spectrum of how we Americans refer to the man who helped to create us and raise us. And I don't know if it's a function of income, but something I've noticed is that lower income whites, like where I'm from, we draw it out and we call it our dad. I don't, but daddy, or Deity, if you're from over there where they roll tide over in Alabama. And at the other end of the spectrum, you got the Manhattan socialite types. Like if you're a Rockefeller or a Trump, they call their dad father. Have you noticed that? My father said. And then poor blacks, what do they call their dad? All right, speaking of poor black kids, listen to this. Well, now this is a story about a poor Indonesian kid, but I'll tie it in here. When my wife and I were teaching there in Indonesia, the kids were 12 or 13, somewhere in there. And I was playing Ken Jennings or Alex Trebek of old. And we devised this Jeopardy game with the kids on the chalkboard. I love Jeopardy. Anybody else love Jeopardy? I love that you can fast forward through it now. I love Jeopardy because it's one of the few places where you can definitely say, oh, I'm smarter than I used to be. Because I don't know about you, but when I would watch it as a kid, I could sit there through an entire show and be lucky if I knew one answer. But every few years, I've watched it as an adult, and it seems like I'll know three answers total. And then 5 years later, I'll know five answers. And now that I'm halfway to 90, I'm like, give me another 10 years and I could be a contestant on the show. As long as they don't do words that start, or what was it? Foods that start with Q. Remember White Men Can't Jump? It was a great movie. But I'll tell you one thing I wish Jennings would do just once. And I wish Alex Trebek had done this too. Stop acting like you know every answer. I know he knows 99% of them, but I just want once to hear him say, wow, Sarah, that's impressive. I was clueless about 15th century homesteading in Northeast Uzbekistan. So we're playing Jeopardy in Indonesia, and the category is geography. And the question was, name a country in Africa. And this kid huddled up with his team. He was the team captain, like the spokesperson. And he says, Gabon. And you never want to mock someone, you know, the old saying for pronouncing a word wrong, because it probably means they learned it from reading. And this would be one of those instances, which is something Morgan Housel mentioned in his latest book, which I covered on the previous three episodes, The Art of Spending Money, if you missed it. So I told him that was incorrect, and he got no points. Well, that night, it dawned on me that he was saying Gabon, and he was right. But since that was our last day in class, I never got to tell him that he was, in fact, correct. And I still feel bad about that. But fast forward to 2024, and a plant from Gabon, Africa, of all places, is what likely saved my life. What are the odds of that? Anyway, this kid in McDonald's, I was telling you about a napkin. He was about my age. We were about 10, and which I know because he had his basketball uniform on. And his dad says to him, or he says to his dad, Daddy, grab me a paper napkin. And so I've always called it a paper napkin. But get this, you've heard the story of the woman who always, there's a story about a woman who always cuts the end of her ham off, like when she's cooking it for the family. And the husband wonders, like, why are we wasting so much ham? And then he went to his in-law's house, and his mother-in-law did the same thing to the ham. And then eventually he goes to his grandma-in-law's house, and she had this little oven, this ancient-looking oven in the kitchen that was from 100 years ago. And as it turns out, she had to cut the end of the ham off so that it'd fit in the oven. So I love that, seeing that sort of stuff. That's the stuff that's passed down through families for years, and you kind of don't know why. I picked something up from my mom and stepdad in the last few years. So I noticed when they take the trash out from the kitchen, they have a bunch of bags sitting there at the bottom of the trash can. So they don't have to go digging for the bags in the pantry or underneath the sink to get a new bag to put in the trash can. They've got a bunch of them sitting there inside the basura there in the kitchen. So I'm doing that now, and I probably will forever. At least till I've programmed Optimus to do it for me, take out the trash. Do you think our robots are going to see each other at the trash can and say, like, hey, you're Brad's robot, no? Yeah, that's me. I'm Brad's. And then they just start gossiping about how you always leave stuff laying around the house, like a sock on the floor, or how often they have to clean, or complain about how one spouse likes salt on her food and the other one couldn't care less. Because I assume they're going to cook for us too, right? One thing I noticed after I got married, this is related, was unused paper towels that would be neatly folded on the counter or on the dinner table in a way that I'd never seen before. And I didn't say anything. I just thought it was odd. And then sure enough, went to my in-laws and I noticed that her mom does the same thing with unused paper towels. She neatly folds them, which they call napkins. How about that? So then a few nights ago, we had a paper towel that we didn't use at dinner, and I see my daughter neatly folding the unused paper towel. Isn't that great? Did you see Bridget Bardot died? I learned that she was one of only four people still alive today who were mentioned in Billy Joel's We Didn't Start the Fire. It was always burning since the world's been turning. There were 29 people mentioned in that song. Wheel of Fortune, Sally Ride, Heavy Metal, Suicide. All right, Gerwinder, he's out with his thread of useful concepts for 2026. So let's get into that, because they're always good. Number one is the 1% rule. He says, in online communities, around 1% of users produce almost all of the content. As such, what you see online is not representative of humanity, but merely of loud, obsessive, and often narcissistic minority. Social media is literally a freak show. That's an odd thing to say, considering he posts on social media all the time. Me, much less so. So I guess that makes him a freak, and me, as for me, maybe I'm just a little bit freaky-deaky-do. But together, we're the freaks of the industry. And when you see us backstage, be prepared to G. Say you G-ing. G-ing? Nobody else is seeing. Booyah, you're looking at her from the rear. I don't want my daughter when she's 9. I don't want her to know a song like that so well that she can sing it, make a donkey of herself when she's in her 40s. But Humpty Dance and Freaks of the Industry, those were my favorite songs when I was 9. And you'd probably think even less of me if I told you that I also had NWA's Straight Outta Compton cassette tape when I was 9. But when I said booyah just now in the song lyric, what that tells me is that I watched the Stuart Scott 30 for 30 the other night. It's excellent. It really takes you back to the 90s where he popularized the term booyah. And me and the wife were discussing whether that's where booyah started. And I think I've just proven that it preceded Stuart Scott. By the Humpty Dance, the guy with the big nose, the Humpty Nose, in the 69, my Humpty Nose will tickle your rear. My nose is big. I actually met Stuart Scott at Rock Bar during Super Bowl weekend when it was in Houston. This was 2004. And I was at Rock Bar because my buddy Horn Diggity Dog was DJing that night. So I was up in the DJ booth. I wish I knew DJs were about to start making $50 million a year. What? Yeah. That's how much they make. Anyway, so I come out of the booth and I'm going to the restroom, and Stuart Scott is coming directly toward me through the crowd, and he didn't have security or anything that I saw. So I stick my hand out and I said, "Hey man, glad you could make it." I said, "I'm up in the DJ booth. Anything you want to hear? I can make it happen for you." And he looks at me, and he looked at me with his good eye, and he said, "Nope," and kept walking. That was my "I carried a watermelon" moment. You remember when Baby said that in Dirty Dancing? She felt dumb because she told Patrick Swayze, the hunk of a dance teacher at the summer camp. She said that she carried a watermelon. She told him she carried a watermelon, and she felt stupid afterward. Actually, I had another moment like that. This was at a banquet about 10 years ago where Chipper Jones was the guest speaker. And I was sitting at a table with some of my best buddies from college right up front near the stage. And they were about to call him up. And dude was three sheets to the wind because we had done some pretty hardcore boozing before dinner. And when they were about to announce him to go up, I looked at him and said, I said something like, "I think they want me to do it if you want to just chill here." I thought that might make him laugh, but he was not amused. He gave me the Stuart Scott eye. I did amuse him a little earlier, though. When I met him, I said, "Man, what are you up to in retirement? Are you just out there dominating the softball circuit these days or what?" And he laughed. And he told me a great story about why he wore his pants up. He said that he got it from Steve Bedrosian. For those of you who remembered that, you remember that bearded closer? His nickname was Bedrock, which is derived from his name, I'm sure. But hey, they call me that too, because I hate to see her go, but I love to watch her leave. But I keep her running back and forth, soccer team, because I can make your bed rock. Mm-hmm. But it was wild watching Stuart Scott's speech again at the ESPYs. I got more verklempt watching it a second time than I did when I saw it when he gave the speech. And it was primarily because the way he signed off. He said, "Have a great rest of your life." And he urged us all to live fully and fight cancer by how you live, not just if you survive. He emphasized that true victory is in living intensely and loving deeply. But the way he signed off, it's only something a dying man would say. Have a great rest of your life. And so it was really powerful. I'm going to skip number two on this list. Let's do number three, reality apathy. When the deluge, some say deluge, of conflicting information makes the effort of finding truth costlier than the value of knowing it, people give up trying to be right and instead choose whatever bullshit stinks least. Slop doesn't just threaten the truth, but the very worth of truth. In case you don't know what slop is, that refers to AI slop, which I saw. It was somebody's word of the year. I can't remember whose, but it might have been the Webster Dictionary I mentioned earlier with the napkin thing. That's where I learned about napkin. Their word of the year, I believe, was 6-7, something stupid, which my daughter asked recently if that was a bad word. And I said, no, it's not bad, but if you say it a lot, you'll just be like everybody else, and you don't want that for your life, do you? I didn't say that. Not because I didn't want to, but I'm told at least once a week that something I say is too grown-up-y, so I'm always working on that. Number four, Rumpelstiltskin effect. Diagnosing one's suffering makes it feel more meaningful and thus manageable, even if the diagnosis is wrong. Major depressive disorder is easier to live with than an anonymous sadness, hence the recent surge in diagnoses of disorders. I've lived quite a bit of my adult life this way, with something that I couldn't get a diagnosis for, and then finally was told I had trigeminal neuralgia or something when I had those terrible pains in my head, which I actually don't think that was right, but it made me feel better to have a diagnosis. And I say I don't think it was right because it went away. Thank you, Gabon. But I thought it would end me, and seeing how I went to half a dozen doctors and couldn't get a diagnosis, which is just a terrible feeling. So yeah, it feels better to have someone tell you what's wrong with you. Number five, context collapse. On social media, we're simultaneously talking to our boss, our ex, our grandma, and a jihadist in Michigan. The result is that many people lobotomize their personalities into an inoffensive PR sludge, trying to please everyone and therefore pleasing no one. It sounds like an ad for LinkedIn. I met up with a buddy recently that I went to high school with. And he, like myself, had a long relationship with a great gal in high school and thereafter. But they ultimately didn't last as we didn't, my relationship. And he said that he had had no contact with her since the dissolution of their relationship. And I said, me too, man. I said, I haven't either. And I think it's better that way. Why people choose to stay in contact with their exes is beyond me. Like, what good can come of that? If you truly cared for her, you'd want her to be happy. Anything else is just selfish, in my opinion. When you yourself find some new love in your life, you can show her that you care about her by not acting like a little bitch who can't get over his ex. That's not even a pro tip. A pro tip would be like, don't eat the yellow snow or don't fry bacon in the nude because the grease could pop off and burn your Richard. Somebody is texting me to death and it's popping up on my notes here. But forgetting your ex and wishing her the best, that is life 101 stuff. It's not pro stuff. And you may have noticed I called my ex a great gal, and she was. She just wasn't a great gal for me. So don't be sad it's over. Smile because it happened. Which is the exact sentiment that my buddy expressed to me when I asked if his breakup was tough. And I believe that's the attitude you want to have. I'm glad it happened. Those are great memories, and I appreciate them. Number 6, the shower test. What you really care about can be found in the thoughts you gravitate to while undistracted, such as in the shower. As Walt Whitman said, if you want to know where your heart is, look to where your mind goes when it wanders. Let me take a sip of coffee here. I don't know that I agree with this one so much. Just related to what I was just talking about. If you find yourself thinking about an ex in the shower, sure, it could be because you have strong feelings toward her, or maybe you went on a date with somebody, some little hot piece, and she creeps into your shower thoughts sometimes. You got to gently push those thoughts out. Allow the logical side of your brain to take over to remind you that there's a reason you didn't pursue that any further than you did. And there's more helpful advice in there too, which is that a lot of us are prone to have regrets about something that we didn't do. But you've got to remind yourself, again, with that logical side of your brain that you're so blessed with to have. Thank you, God, for this logical side. You want to remind yourself that with all the information you had at that time, you made the best decision for yourself. So trust in that. The whole, man, if I knew what I knew then, what I know now, that's just a waste of mental energy. You can't build on that. But what can you do? You can use that thought to ensure that you won't be too soon old, too late smart about other stuff. Number 7. Eustress. The most comfortable people are often miserable because discomfort isn't an obstacle to happiness, it's the path to it. For it's only by enduring struggles that we develop the resilience necessary for lasting contentment. Oh, this one hits me super hard. I remind myself constantly to remain cheerful despite my circumstances, which is easier said than done because I've had to deal with some serious crap in this life. But it's the seriousness of unexpected hardship that you face that is going to make you unfuckwithable. So don't wish for less problems. You'd be better served to pray for more capacity to handle your problems because they're not going to stop coming. Oh, you think there's some lofty perch you'll arrive at where this view from the top is going to enable you to coast without any problems the rest of your life? Who taught you that? Who told you that, dude? So don't pray for less problems. Pray for more ability to endure your problems. And in doing so, you will equip yourself with a robustness and resilience that may surprise even you. You're way stronger than you think. You just want to get some purpose, get some God in your life, and then and only then can you begin to penetrate the world with the sum total of your unique talents and gifts, and watch how your demons fold before your eyes. Watch how they submit to you. This purpose-driven man, this mindset, it's no match for some fucking demon. Get out of here with that, you low-life devil. I will eat a demon for breakfast. You with me? All right, good. Glad we got that covered. All right, number 8, Amara's Law. We tend to overestimate the short-term impact of new tech and underestimate the long-term impact, since hype inflates expectations and thus disappointment and thus skepticism. It's possible for AI to be both a bubble and the most transformative tech since fire. Is AI a bubble? Who knows? But that's why we diversify, right? I've said this before, but when the internet came along, nobody knew what it was going to be. The most educated idiots among us, like I'm thinking Paul Krugman, the guy who calls himself an economist, even though he's about as economist as Anna Navarro is Republican, he believed the internet was going to have no greater impact on society than the fax machine. Can you believe we're still using fax machines? I just had a doctor, this was last week, a couple weeks ago, I had a doctor refer me to a specialist, and I was told that the referral had to be sent by fax. I'm like, faxed? would you get rid of your pigeon? Why does it have to be faxed? And what nobody predicted as it pertains to the internet is that search would be how the World Wide Web was most utilized. And we'll have to take the good with the bad as it pertains to AI. Just like with cars. With cars, we lose about 4,000 lives in Texas per year due to car accidents. And 40,000 people a year in America. Just in the U.S., 40,000 people a year. But I don't think anyone would argue that we shouldn't have motor vehicles. Well, it's the same with the internet. Without search, well, think about this. Without search, maybe Casey Anthony wouldn't have known how to use chloroform. So you take the good with the bad. But onward. So number 10, healthy user bias. People who try supplements that may have health benefits are naturally more health conscious and likely already healthier than those who don't. Studies often mistake the healthiness of supplement triers for the health benefits of the supplement. Yeah, I've talked about this too before. As it relates to sauna usage, which I use 3 or 4 times a week, I'm in the sauna. You see all these studies about how regular sauna users, they have reduced all-cause mortality by a lot. But who's to say somebody who has access to a sauna, which means they have the means, obviously, and the free time to get into a sauna 3 to 4 times a week, who's to say that's not skewing the studies? You know, I never see unhealthy looking people in the sauna, so we need to know who's being studied. When you walk around the gym, you see hard bodies everywhere because the rich get richer. They look good because they're in there all the time and probably have been in there consistently for years. Gym rats who have to battle the New Year's resolution crowds at the gym, those that sign up for their New Year's resolution in America in January, they're just experiencing payback from a week or two ago when Big Swole showed up at Christmas in church. My phone is going crazy. Hold on a second, please. All right, number 11, oxytocin paradox. Oxytocin, the love hormone, can also make people spiteful. Cruelty is not simply the opposite of compassion, it's often adjacent to it. So much evil is done out of love. Beware of those quick to show empathy, for they may be just as quick to show sadism. I could do an entire episode on this one. But yes, cruelty and compassion seem to be components of the same heart. It's like Solzhenitsyn said in the Gulag Archipelago, the line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being. And what we see too often in America is those who believe themselves to be on the side of the angels, thinking that they're so compassionate and signaling their virtue on social media, but deep down they're actually just cruel and will continue to be so. They don't even know about the NGO grift and the Somali fraud, and they shield themselves from the truths like that because it would hurt too much and make them question their entire worldview. Like, how dumb do you have to be at this point to advocate for higher taxes? For what? For the climate grift? Or you want to make the Clintons and the Kerrys richer? You remember all that John Kerry did to avoid paying taxes on his yacht? All the private air travel that didn't make you think twice about the climate stuff? They convinced you that was okay? Or what about Bernie? Bernie's my favorite to pick on. Like, you can't tell when Bernie's being insincere? Or do you not care? You know how many people Bernie has lifted out of poverty or elevated from the middle class to millionaire status? Just one, himself. That's why he doesn't refer to the millionaires and billionaires anymore. It's just billionaires. It'll be interesting to see if he lives long enough to where he can only chastise the trillionaires, you know, if he becomes a billionaire. So them proposing higher taxes would be like a parasite suggesting to you, you know, you really should get some more nutrients and some blood in here. You know, a parasite's got to eat. Or maybe a millionaire millionaire blood transfusion so the parasite can eat. Anyone still see parasites in their newsfeed? I have maybe 3-4 left. When I was communist friends, when I was in New Orleans a few weeks before Christmas, I saw this gal who lives in my mom's neighborhood, which is uber leftist in New Orleans. And this gal has a lib sister who I have a pretty special connection to her sister going way back. But that's a story for another time. But when I saw her, the sister, I thought, you know, I haven't seen the sister in my news feed in a while, the one I have this connection to. I wonder what she's been up to. And I can tell her I saw her sister and go say hello. Well, when I pulled up Facebook, underneath her profile pic, I saw the button for add friend. So she had defriended me, which happens quite a bit. You know what I think about when I see that? I think about a lot of things, but mostly, as somebody who's studied the arc of human history and I'm fascinated by it, I think about how women don't really need men anymore for protection and provisioning, especially. But now that we've allowed them so much power and influence nowadays that they don't feel that at all. Like, think of the HR director who's been unwilling to hire a white male for the last 10 years. So much power and influence. But if we were, let's say this was 1,000 years ago, it would have behooved a woman to be nice to men because you never know if you're going to need them someday. You're living in a tribe or a little community of 150 people, and you've got a conquering tribe on the other side of the mountain. You'd be unwise to be anything but kind to men. But think about this. If the communists are successful in destroying civilized society, and they've accomplished a lot in places like Great Britain and France and Belgium and Sweden, if we become a third world country by importing millions of people from the third world, these chicks are going to need us. And if that happens, I would like to think I'd be like, yeah, you didn't want my friendship, but sure, I'll help you. I'll help to save you from these Pakistanis who want to kidnap and gang rape your daughter. Just kidding. They're not reproducing. Not many of them. Actually, I would help, actually, which is what I think about every time I see an awful who doesn't know how the world works. I always just think she's coming from a place of ignorance and she's not going to be convinced otherwise. This happened to me last weekend. I was at a drive-thru in Houston at the Kolache Factory, which is fast becoming a Saturday morning tradition for us. And I was second in line behind the car at the window. And when the car at the window was done, he had to turn right to get behind cars that were at the red light. So there were two cars sitting at the red light, waiting on it to turn green. So there's a red light as you're leaving the parking lot. So this hood rat woman behind me starts laying on the horn for me to pull up, and I couldn't go anywhere. And it could be I was in an SUV and Ron Keisha was in a sedan of some sort behind me. So she couldn't see what the deal was in front of me. I couldn't pull up because the car in front of me had only pulled up a foot or two and turned his wheel to the right so that he could follow the two cars once the light turned green. So finally the light turns green and these three cars start moving and I was able to pull up to the window. Well, I looked in my side mirror and she's sitting there waiting for me to see her middle finger that she's got held up out of her window. So I say to her, we both have our windows open, and I said, why are you upset? And she says, because you an asshole. And I said, that might be true, but you're just real dumb. And she says, I was honking my horn trying to get you to pull up and you just sat there. And I laughed and said, there was a car in front of me, dummy. And she waved her hand as if to say whatever. And when the girl with the headset in the window handed me my kolaches, the whole kitchen staff had crowded around her looking at me. And a few of them were smiling. So I guess they heard it over the intercom system or whatever. But people virtue signaling that they're a wonderful person. We see that almost every day, right? And they have all this concern for the poor. Meanwhile, they're trying to silence and censor people who think differently than they do. They want them removed from polite society. It was obvious to me at the height of our color revolution that there were a lot of people who would just as soon send us to prison and or kill us if they could. And sadly, I was proven right as we had political prisoners for the first time in our country, and we watched as bad guys cheered on political assassinations. It's very sad. Number 12, Original position fallacy. Far left favor planned economies because they imagine themselves as the planners, not the planned. Far right favor a return to feudalism because they imagine themselves as the lords, not the peasants. Both views stem from main character syndrome. This is something I think about when we're walking around a castle in Europe. We tend to think about what life would be like if we'd been royalty back then and lived in this castle. But the odds are not in your favor. You most likely would have been a peasant. And I mean, how close are you to royalty here and now? Most of us aren't even 6 degrees of separation from J.D. Vance or Trump. All right, 13 is Coyote's Law. Don't give the government a power you wouldn't want your political enemies to wield, because one day they may well be in charge of it. Yeah, like lawfare. Don't do it. Because if bad guys ever take office who think differently than you do, there is now precedence in America for using the courts to try to put your political enemies in a cage for the rest of their life. You ever think about, what if one of Trump's sons ever got into office? Like Eric. That dude is so pissed off about all that they put his family through. But I think it'd probably be even worse if one of his daughters got in office. What might she do to Pelosi for January 6th? Dems aren't big on gratitude, I know, but they should be so grateful that Trump's not a bad guy. But of course they knew that because they did all the lawfare and tried to bankrupt him and get him thrown off the ballot in, what, Maine, Colorado, a few states, not allowed his, or they didn't want he or his family to have access to the banking system. They accused him of being a racist and a Nazi and illegitimate and a threat to democracy and raided his house and nothing major. But no way they would have done those things to Trump if they thought for a second that he was like them. Think about what a dictator would do, which they, of course, accused him of being. But what would a ruthless dictator do to all those involved in the coup? And not just to Trump. What if they really thought that there was a lot of white supremacy in America? If there were gun-toting militias ready to pounce, you think they would have spied on senators and thrown Peter Navarro in prison and stole $100 million from Rudy Giuliani? No, they would not have done that. So Trump is not only the most transparent president we've had, but probably the cleanest politician too. Nobody's been more thoroughly investigated than that man, which is why they had to manufacture some BS to try to take him down. What if they really thought he was like Putin and not a good dude? You think they would have done all that? No chance. Commies think kindness is weakness. Let's hope they soon find out that's not the case. And that goes for all the fraudsters and the grifters who have no fear of being held accountable. All right, last one for today. It's called the George Bailey Effect. Imagining the absence of a blessing increases gratitude more than focusing on the presence of it. Instead of wishing for a Porsche, imagine losing your legs. Suddenly walking feels like a miracle. I have to remind myself of this every day because I can't do much, but at least I can walk. Not very far without taking a break, but I can still get out of bed and move around a little bit. You want me to finish you off with some female psychology here pertaining to this George Bailey effect? He says, imagining the absence of a blessing increases gratitude more than focusing on the presence of it. So for you young kings out there still swimming in the dating pool, you should know this. A woman is like a cat with a ball of yarn. That cat may not appreciate you while she's got you. And she's surely not imagining life without your attention. Women live in the micro realm where attention is like oxygen. And sure, it's nice to be dating you, just as the cat thinks it's cool that it's got this yarn ball to play with. But if you suddenly remove your attention, you are stepping on her air hose and you get to watch her become feral, like a cat who's had its ball of yarn taken away. Friends, I appreciate you tuning in. As we part ways this time, let us start the new year heeding the words of the late and great Stuart Scott, who said, nope, and just walked away. Just kidding. He said, have a great rest of your lives. So let's make 2026 one for the ages, our best yet. If I can do anything for you, let me know. I will chat back at you next time. Thank you, folks. God bless.